It's the record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke.
Families belong together. No human is illegal. And as Americans, we will not stop fighting until every single child is reunited with their family.
That sound from the Saturday rally at the SeaTac Federal Detention Center. Protesters spoke out about President Trump's zero-tolerance immigration policy. Over the weekend, more than 700 cities held Families Belong Together marches. Washington State's U.S. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal joined the rally in D.C. days after she was arrested at an immigration protest at the Senate building. The rally was just one of the big stories of the weekend, and joining me to discuss it and other stories is our panel, Leah Baltus, editor-in-chief of City Arts Magazine. Welcome back, Leah.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Susie Lee, artist, entrepreneur, former CEO, founder of the dating app Siren. Welcome back, Susie.
Thank you.
Susie, these events were under the banner Families Belong Together. You have said that this moral indignation doesn't necessarily carry over to other family issues. What do you mean?
What I was saying is that, you know, it's pretty clear to everybody that you shouldn't separate parents from their children. But this one instance is not something that it actually happens quite regularly. For example, when you have children that are in the foster system, right? Or as Leah and I were talking about with the youth detention facility. So to look at a broader context of why do you separate families in the U.S., I think it's a more difficult conversation that we should have.
Are you saying it's somehow falling short to be not protesting all these other issues, but to be called to action when families and children are split?
Well,
is it hypocritical?
There's something about the magnitude of what's going on at the border and the way that it's tied into the whole electricity of the situation. Mm-hmm. And that's bringing out people's passion. And that's great. But hopefully now we can also apply that same passion to other kinds of causes like the one Susie's mentioning with the youth jail, et cetera.
Speaking of that passion, what have you thought of the call? This is most famously associated with the woman who just won an election in New York State nowhere, 28-year-old Democratic Socialist. And one of her platform issues is abolish ICE.
Yes.
What do you think of that? I've heard a lot of debate about whether that's a wise rallying cry. What do you think, Susie?
So her name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and I think it was a really amazing and sweeping victory that she did. It seems like one of those things where reform is absolutely necessary, that the organization, that ICE basically kind of got derailed in terms of what it's supposed to be doing or any kind of mission of what it's supposed to be doing. To actually completely abolish it seems like one of those things where you throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Why is that?
Because I think that there are ways in which you can look at any kind of organization that's not working and then go, it's not working, we should just tear it down. And there's a lot of things like that that I think is the sort of first impulse. But there are ways to think about, the safety of, citizens and non-citizens and immigration, and that we need to have an organization that actually does oversee that.
Some people are saying, you're just giving. Predictably, President Trump is saying, there's the crazy Democrats, they want open borders, and that this is tactically a bad idea to call for abolishing ICE.
Well, and I think that the people who are calling for the abolishment of ICE are, focused on the kinds of fear that ICE now inflicts on people who are in danger of deportation under the current situation. And that seems like a not great role for the government to be playing.
Mm-hmm. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, by the way, said yesterday on NPR that ICE was a creation shortly after 9/11. She says, in quote, "I will just say it has become a rogue agency with no accountability, no transparency, wasting taxpayer dollars, and a very misdirected focus." Let's talk about some other local news. I saw that the Sasquatch Music Festival has called it quits after 17 years of live music in the woods. So to speak. In a statement, the founder Adam Zak said, 17 years is a long time to do anything. The Beatles only lasted 8 years.
quite a run.
quite a run. Leah, you've been to Sasquatch, right?
I went a bunch of times in the early years. I'm pretty sure I went to the first one and maybe four or five of the first ones. Then I got old.
Well, is that what you think is behind the end of Sasquatch? Are its biggest fans aging out?
Oh, no. I think just, you know, the whole festival phenomenon has peaks and valleys, and I think we reached peak festival maybe 3 years ago.
And, but why? Why should there be a peak of festivals?
I mean, they're really expensive to put on. Uh-huh. There's a huge amount of risk, and if you somehow don't get that turnout, then the amount of financial loss can be pretty significant. I think it's Live Nation that's been producing it. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the real reason, in addition to Adam Zak deciding to be finished himself as the curator and booker, that they, you know, they weren't seeing the ticket sales. So who knows why that could be, but Memorial Day at the Gorge is a questionable weather moment.
Yeah, know? right.
I've been in a hailstorm at Sasquatch, which was both memorable and not so pleasant.
And there feels to be you know, definitely the corporatizing of all of these kind of festivals, where whether it's Burning Man or Coachella or, you know, Sasquatch, that when, you know, Leah and I went first to the, you know, the original ones, that they were more affordable for sure. And they just seemed something that was very regional and kind of homegrown in a way.
How so? How did you, what about it seemed homegrown?
Well, first of all, the location, right, which is you know, magnificent, and no other festival that I can think of has the gorge as its backdrop.
Yeah.
And
the Columbia River Gorge, for those newcomers who maybe don't even know Sasquatch yet. Yes, it's a stunning view.
Yes. And I don't know, there was just something about it that felt like, you know, these were, you know, even though they were great headliner acts, that a lot of the new and up-and-coming bands were local. They were ones that you hadn't heard of before and that you were just super excited to be able to see them in one place.
Do you remember who you saw at Sasquatch?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw an amazing Bjork performance that I'll never forget.
I remember that.
I saw that Beck performance where he had the band doing the crazy table banging, plate juggling madness. That was amazing.
It wasn't two turntables.
No.
That they were juggling. No.
And a microphone.
And a microphone. No. It's
I remember
something different.
The Bjork performance. Oh my God, that was amazing.
It was amazing. There were some great moments, and I'm sure that great moments have continued. I mean, I know people who've been going every single year, and they'll like get the sweet spot at Cave B Winery to stay like grown-ups, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still really great. Some people are really down with the festival experience. They like to take their music with the thousands. I am not that person anymore.
That is how you can age with the festival, is you start out going all the way there, you know, and sleeping wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually your accommodations get fancier and you just kind of make the short trip from a convenient outskirt.
Right.
You know?
I don't think that was the Cave B Winery also in the first couple of years.
Yeah, that maybe didn't even exist yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing the Flaming Lips at Sasquatch.
That's the one we were talking about. With the fuzzy animals?
With the fuzzy costume animals and the huge balloons.
Were you on mushrooms?
I was not. Why do you ask?
Just because apparently a lot of people were.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it was a good combination, the fuzzy animals and just peeking on a psychedelic experience.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Are we talking about the same year? I think Jurassic 5 was there.
Yeah.
Coldplay was there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that was the year.
Yeah, wasn't it all the same year?
I
and
can't
Nico
remember one
Case
lineup from the next. But
yeah, they blur. They blur. Modest Mouse. Anyway, yeah. So do you're with City Arts Magazine, Leah? Is there to you, is the loss of Sasquatch, is that good news, bad news, or no news as far as the arts picture in the North?
I mean, ebbs and flows, right? There are other good festival bookings for local acts to get that will help them ascend in their careers. And in the meantime, the upside of all of this is that sometimes when really great artists are on tour, they will end up getting booked at something like Sasquatch, and that means they skip Seattle on their tour. And so now a lot of those artists might turn up in our city venues, and there might be more people who are able to see them.
Why wouldn't they go to both Seattle and the Gorge?
You know, it can be different reasons. I don't know exactly, as not a booker, I don't know exactly how all the blackout dates work, but sometimes there's that, and other times there's just, well, we're not going to add two Northwest dates on this tour. They'll do maybe a Sasquatch date plus a Portland date, but not, or a Vancouver date, but not a Seattle, so stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Susie, you were saying that there's something northwesty about our art scene, something about our kind of terroir, our geography, our style. What do you mean by that?
I mean, even if you're not like a big hiker, which I don't think I am, you know, especially as a creative person, you kind of absorb the idea that there's this this natural beauty here and this abundance of resources, as well as, of course, the weather, where it lends to kind of a hermit-like experience. Mm-hmm. But all of that, I think, created this this kind of, I mean, and this was before, I think, when we were talking about kind of the original days of Sasquatch, where I think as an artist, you could really hone and understand who you were and your identity and sort of learn your craft before you got exposed to larger cities. I don't know if that's there so much, and I don't know if a lot of the places that people were naturally able to congregate to kind of be able to fuel their creativity is here in the city in, as much, but I remember that energy, like, you know, going to Sasquatch with groups of people that were also like artists that were sharing the same studio spaces, and that you would all rent a van and go together. Like, you never stopped being an artist, right? So you would go to these events and just feel like it all just kind of fueled each other.
I want to talk about another story that got a lot of attention this weekend. There's an article published in the Atlantic magazine last week called An App for Ejecting the Homeless, and it looks at the city of Seattle's Find It, Fix It app, which normally or originally was used to report potholes and sidewalk problems, some neighborhood issues. People have been increasingly using it to report homeless encampments, and it's done anonymously, by the way. Leah Baltus, have you used the app? What do you think of this?
I have used the app because, like, the street sign on my corner fell over, but I certainly didn't use it to, like, manifest my anonymous fear of the poor. I mean, this is ridiculous and disgusting, and the fact that people can use an app to try to shoo away any sort of visible signs of the duress that people are facing is horrifying. And if you're going to call someone and report something like that, you should have to give your name, and you should have to, like, question your moment there where you're talking to a person and making that call.
Well, what's wrong with reporting something anonymously? You don't want to. I don't want to get involved. I just want the police to know this is going on.
It's just an extension of NIMBYism. It's just the same kind of, like, well, I don't want to see it. I don't want to have my name attached to it. I just don't want this to exist in my sphere.
Mm-hmm. We were also just looking at one of the interfaces, and it's not really clear at all where you could actually report the homeless. Like, you have to be somewhat insistent and persistent to try to think that this app was intended for that use even.
Yes, I'm looking at the app categories. You can report abandoned vehicle, graffiti, litter/illegal dumping/needles, parking enforcement, pothole, sign and signal maintenance, streetlight report, other inquiry.
Yeah, like that other just feels like that's a big stretch. I do think, though, that by having people report anonymously, you do see the kind of darker side of what we like to kind of pat ourselves on being a very liberal and progressive city, that people like to say that on the outside, but when they sort of are faced with it right in their backyards, they tend to be a lot more conservative. And so I think this is a snapshot of that aspect of it where, you know, yeah, it's like, sure, we want to support the homeless, but just not here.
Only in the abstract.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're linking the anonymity with someone not wanting to take ownership of their opinion. I thought someone was, I don't want to have to deal with a bunch of paperwork. I don't want somebody angry with me. I want to report this. And if the police don't want to do anything about the encampment, that's up to them. But you're saying there's a hypocrisy, there's a shell game in Seattle?
I think so.
I mean, agree.
You know, you could link to Facebook. It wouldn't, like, reporting, it wouldn't be that complicated of a thing to do to basically attach your name to it. But, you know, I think it also lends to, you know, Leah's talking about people's fear of poor people, that somehow they're more violent, or that they're, you know, that they're going to do horrible things to people. And you're like, they don't have a home. That's really their only crime. And so why is it that it's such a threat to see that within the block that you live in?
Finally, quickly, we've been asking people, are you going to watch any less football. We had the Seattle Seahawks safety Cam Chancellor saying, sounds like he's retiring, and he made a reference to, pray for your boy. I have no clue how these head injuries will go after the game. Is this starting to weigh on any Seahawk love you may have, or Huskies, or whatever, or peewee football?
Yeah, for me, I mean, the combination of the growing awareness around these head injuries and the focus on it and instances like what's going on with Cam Chancellor and that, plus the national anthem stuff, is just kind of too much for me. I've been telling my husband, who's an Eagles fan and therefore is not really ready to give up
on his NFL watching.
But I'm like, I don't know if I'm going in on that this year, because I just it makes me feel gross watching
yeah,
it, which is
like
not
a,
good.
Like a, you know, your racist old uncle that's like, you know, you're like, ah, this, yeah, you're not saying the right things anymore. You're kind of out of step with the times.
Mm-hmm. We're watching the fall of football.
Maybe.
Well, I think you could also ask a lot of parents of young boys and see if they would be tolerant of having their child actually go through that. And I think you'd probably find fewer and fewer of them that are okay with that.
Susie Lee, artist, entrepreneur, former CEO and founder of the dating app Siren. Leah Baltus is editor-in-chief of City Arts Magazine. And we get together and talk about what maybe you missed if you were camping or whatnot over the weekend. But thanks for recapping the news of the weekend.
Of course.
Thanks, Bill.
It's The Record on KUOW Seattle. We're going to come right back.